CliffCentral.com.
Well, we're going to talk to somebody this morning who's hopefully going to clear up a lot of very confusing terminology for us, as well as share her real energy and enthusiasm for a cause that she's been working on pretty much her entire life. She's an incredible guest, and I'm happy to have her on the podcast. Fiona Dawson is her name, and Fiona is an Emmy-nominated and award-winning filmmaker. She has been a member of the LGBTQIA2+ community, also DEI expert. She's a sought-after speaker and a content creator, and she's just written an incredible book, which I think is going to get an enormous amount of attention all over the world. She's written a book called Are Bisexuals Just Greedy? And it offers all kinds of explanations, which I think many people are looking for. And I hope with the questions that we've got for her today, we'll settle some of those answers too, so that we can move forward and be more inclusive and be more useful as human beings to each other. So Fiona, it's such a pleasure to have you on, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Gareth, so much. That was an incredible introduction.
Well, listen, I mean, you're a hugely accomplished person. What made you decide to write the book in addition to, you know, Emmy awards and all kinds of other things?
Yeah, it's funny. I've made a 2-minute animation that you can find on YouTube explaining the difference between the word cisgender and transgender, because it was a question that I got a lot, and all through my work with trans military. And I thought, I just want to make a little video, so if anyone asks, they can just go look at this and find out. And then once I had done that, I started realizing, oh, there's so many other questions that I commonly get asked. So it's like writing these scripts to turn into film or animation. And before I knew it, I realized, oh my gosh, I think I've actually got a book here. So I thought, let's just do a book first, you know, because I need to get this content out in the world. So it's just a matter of like having something that's like stuck in your head and you can't control yourself. You just have to like expel it. And so getting a book together was like the easiest way for me to do that at the time.
Well, you mentioned Trans Military, which is your documentary, and that premiered at South by Southwest, I think it was back in 2018.
Correct.
And that's won plenty of awards and nominations for awards. And you've been living in America for a long time, but I can hear that you're not from America originally. and I think you and I are of about the same age cohort as well.
I think so. I think we are. People ask me where I'm from, and I say, well, the accent is from England, but I'm from Texas. I was born and raised in the UK, but I left in 98 and volunteered in Bangladesh, and then worked in Portugal, and then ended up in Houston, Texas in the year 2000. So I've been living in the States now for over 21 years. So I feel more American these days, even though I've retained this accent somehow.
Yeah, and Austin is such an amazing and interesting place with, you know, just the most incredible collision of all kinds of cultures in America. And it's also one of the places I was at South by Southwest, I think, for 3 years of the incredible festival they do there.
Yeah.
And, you know, the people you meet, it's just extraordinary how diverse and varied all of their interests are.
Oh, yeah, completely. Like, so Austin is where I am now. After Houston, I went to New York, and I always longed to come back to Texas. One, because it's hot and cheap. But two, it's like it is like a rich culture of diversity and intersectionality. And people often don't think that about Texas. You know, we've got this like stereotype that we're, you know, we're very, very conservative. And while I think politically there are some very conservative people in power, it is just a gorgeous mix of culture. And yeah, South by is an incredible experience.
Now, you said something amazing just now, and you mentioned how you get all these questions, and people have so many questions about how we, you know, how we're meant to use pronouns, who's in the LGBTQIA plus, and who knows, because they might be adding some more letters while we're busy with this interview.
Oh, I'm sure they are.
The fact is that a lot of people are very scared to even ask these questions because they're worried about stepping over some invisible line. They're worried about getting into trouble. And there have been innumerable cases throughout the last, I don't know, probably 5 to 6 years, when it's really become one of those front and center issues, where people have been, I suppose, canceled. People have been reprimanded, much worse in some cases, for getting it wrong. So it's not surprising to me that there are questions, but it does surprise me that people are asking them. And that they're actually brave enough to stand up and say, hey, look, I don't really know what the 2A or the plus, or what, you know, what is the difference between X and Y? And, you know, how do we figure this out? Do you find people are scared to ask?
Yes, I do. And I think that we're living in a very exciting time where we're getting to explore and kind of break the binary of gender and sexuality. I think one of the reasons why I wrote the book is because people are scared to ask, but people that know me know that I'm somebody that you can ask. And I feel like you have to start with self-awareness. Everybody, you know, whether you identify as LGBTQ or not, like getting to know yourself first is really the first step to getting to know other people. And I think that once you've kind of done some exploration yourself on like your own gender identity and what does gender mean to you? Like maybe gender just is this like binary bucket over here. You know, you're a guy. I don't even need to question it. I can just get on with my life. But I think even if you've had that recollection of yourself, hopefully that can then lead you to think, well, hang on, does not everybody feel like that? Like, does somebody feel different from me? And then the second, you know, step is like learning about other people and kindly and courageously asking questions in a respectful way, like being able to judge when it's appropriate to ask a question, you know, and when it's not. And I think that when you can acknowledge like your own identity first, then I think it's the question to the other person can be a lot easier received as well. And I think the more education and like quality, but inviting education we can have out there for people to be able to do the research before they ask other people's question, I think the better, because some people don't want to have to be like an encyclopedia of their own body parts or, you know, their own minds.
And it is always changing, and it does feel like it's a bit of a minefield. So I think many people just avoid even trying to educate themselves because it feels like you're just going to get into trouble no matter where you go. You know, and I know that we're being sensitive on that side of the scale, and there's obviously the sensitivity on the other side of the scale where people in that community are completely ignored, and there's plenty in the modern media about, you know, kind of how we're all starting to evolve into a world where there are all these different categories that people can belong to. And I think we're almost at a point, I don't want to jump the gun here, but we're almost at a point now where this is part of, you know, the dialogue. It's part of what people do. You kind of meet people, and if they're a they at a party, you just call them they.
Exactly. It's really actually not that hard. Like,
no. Yeah, it does strike me though that so many people in this world are also just looking to be special. And again, this is no reflection on the LGBT community, but in general, a lot of people are hoping to have something about them that makes them memorable, that makes them interesting, that makes other people want to be with them, talk to them, enjoy a, you know, conversation with them, and perhaps more. But it's hard to do that these days with social media, with people having avatars, with having you know, a separate identity online to the identity you have in real life. Did that also have something to do with the desire to put this book together?
Desire to put the book together. Because I want to be special?
not for you. I say that there are so many people who have so many places to put their personality now. And we all have this, we all have an online and a real life personality. And for some people, the online one is closer to what they really are.
Yeah, I think that it does feel like it's a wash. Like it's so easy to get lost, I think, as you say, in people trying to leave their imprint on the world, you know, have their legacy. And for me, it's like there was a time like a few years ago where I was extremely intimidated by all of the personalities and the influences emerging on social. And I think that what I learned to do is to be able to like redirect my mind away from that and just know that I don't need to compare or judge myself compared to that, you know, judge myself next to them. Like I am me. This is my life. I've discovered my internal voice, and therefore I'm just going to do what comes naturally to me. So I would say like writing the book really came from an inherent feeling that it was needed in the world. And this is how I can contribute. Because part of me really wishes that I was an incredible TikTok influencer. Like I wish I had millions of followers on TikTok, but I know that I can't. Like I'm boring. Like I'm like your old auntie Fiona. Like when I came out as bisexual, I uploaded a video on YouTube that really now looks like a dinosaur was trying to like enter the internet, you know? And I just think that at a certain point,
I hope you didn't delete it, by the way.
No, it's out there. I would change the language slightly. It's not, you know, it shouldn't be cancelled yet. but you know, that's yeah, but just realizing, okay, like we can't be everything to everybody. And you just have to figure out, like, what is it that I can do best? And I think that me talking, I don't know if I'm allowed to swear or use sex words on your show.
You can say anything you like.
I mean, like, the dedication is for my dad. And it says, "Dear Dad, please just skip the parts where I talk about blowjobs." And so I feel like rather than being a TikTok influencer, I can just be racy in a book and I can get people's attention talking about blowjobs. How's that?
Yeah, I've found it's always easy to have these conversations if you do have a bit of humor and yes. and not take yourself too seriously, because I have been involved in a few where it got quite unpleasant and hairy because it became all about, you know, kind of, you didn't get this right, therefore you must be one of these hateful people. And I like to take myself less seriously in those situations, but some people really do take it very seriously.
Oh,
then you're
know.
Always in trouble.
Yeah. Oh. I mean, and I think I actually wrote that in the book somewhere, is like, you know, the point is not to take ourselves so seriously or take life so seriously. So, you know, while on the one hand, the book is like an instruction manual on how not to be an asshole, you know, but on the other, it's like, you know, just tongue in cheek jokes about stuff. It's like, why do we have to get so het up about things? All it is a simple conversation about getting to know other human beings better. And that should be fun and delightful, you know. Yeah. It shouldn't be a climate of counseling everybody just because they F it up, you know.
Yeah, precisely. Especially if they're comedians. They're just, you know, everybody's an equal moving target. And God knows what we're talking about now. Someone might pick this interview up in 20 years' time and say, look at those two, how out of step they are now.
Exactly.
And invariably, history is going to make all of us look really silly one day, because they'll be thinking about how, you know, how could these people eat meat? How could they use coal to make electricity? What kind of primitive man are we dealing with here?
Exactly. Or what kind of primitive person, not just primitive man, right?
Very good. Okay, so let's go down the rabbit hole here, because there's so much. Okay. I could talk to you in general terms all day and we wouldn't run out of things to talk about, but people have specific questions. So first of all, there is this sort of parent definition of cisgender and transgender. Cisgender is, as I understand it, and this is where you're going to have to help me, cisgender is I'm female, I was born into a female body, I feel like a female, I interact with the world as a female, cisgender, or in the case of male, just replace the word female in that sentence. Is that about right? And then transgender is different.
Yes, it is about right. I would use slightly different language.
Help first me. What's the right language?
First of all, so the audience should know that the word cisgender is spelt with a C. It's C-I-S-G-E-N-D-E-R, cisgender. And then, of course, transgender, we've seen a lot, T-R-A-N-S, gender. And so they're both Latin words, actually. So take the beginning part of the word, and cis, C-I-S, means aligned in Latin, whereas trans means crossed over. So the first thing to understand is that sex, or genitalia, let's say, is between your legs, and gender is wired between your brains, in your ears, you know, wired in your brain between your ears. And so if you are cisgender, it means when you were born, let's say male, let's use you as an example, Gareth, you were assigned male at birth. I'm making the assumption that you're cisgender, by the way, which is rather rude. So now think about your genitals.
Well, yeah, people say I look like Ellen DeGeneres, so it gets confusing.
Maybe a little chunkier than yeah. Ellen.
happy between the ears and down there. It's fairly aligned.
It's fairly aligned. Okay. So you're assigned, we say that the language is assigned male at birth. So you were assigned a sex at birth. You know, babies can't speak at that time. So they can't say, hey, I know what my gender is. I know what my sex is. So if you were assigned male at birth, and then throughout your life, you grow up, and your brain knows that you also identify with being male, therefore you are cisgender. Most people in the world are cisgender, you know, over 95% at least plus people in the world are cisgender. If you're trans, it means that, say you had been assigned male at birth based upon the genitalia that you had between your legs, but as you grew up, you knew that your gender was different from that. And let's say that you knew that your gender was female. And so that would potentially make you transgender. It means that your genitalia and your gender are not aligned. They're crossed over. So if junk and gender aligned, you're cis. If they're not aligned, you're trans. And that is like a very bare bones binary way of explaining it. Because, of course, gender is on a spectrum. There are many genders between male and female. And also, there are genitalia that is on a spectrum between male and female as well. We can't ignore that one in 100 individuals are actually born intersex. That means that they have any variation of male and female sex tissue, chromosomes, and hormones. And so I think that when you realize, like, acknowledge the existence of intersex individuals, and you acknowledge the presence of non-binary individuals, and you expose that there is this binary in the, excuse me, this non-binary in the middle, there's this spectrum, you can see actually, oh yes, of course, it would make sense that all human beings could exist across a spectrum, because everything in life is a spectrum. Things aren't actually binary buckets. And so it's really cool to like break that down and start to see life in humans in a very like non-binary way of seeing there's many more than just these two different buckets.
But aren't those people who are non-binary really just exceptions to a rule? Like in, you know, most kind of animal species, that's the situation that exists. And I know that we're, you know, immediately you tend into, oh, well, then you must be some kind of hater because you don't believe in it. I'm sure people can be pretty much anything they want to be. And these days, you know, you do have people who identify as, I know, pony kind or whatever. But the fact is that humans are largely a gender dimorphic species, and we're mostly male or female, and how we interact sexually may be on a spectrum, but this is quite new thinking. I mean, we're not talking about, you know, 500 years of this being part of the philosophical wisdom of humanity, right?
Try not to crack up, because who created the rule, Gareth? Where did this rule come from?
Well, I mean, it's evident in biology. For start, you did mention one of those people in 100 who's intersex, but
right.
those people that used to be a medical category, and it is a medical category, and sometimes those people identify as X or Y, and I don't mean to use those because they're the chromosomes, but they are really a tiny, tiny minority of the total number of people who live in the world.
So I would say, again, like, let's bring the conversation to remind us that there are differences between sex and gender.
Right.
Because while sex is like...
But the idea that they're separate, sorry, what I want to get to is the idea that gender and sex are separate is a fairly novel idea.
It's not a novel idea. In fact, scientists, it's novel in the last decade, I suppose, the separation of sex and gender. However, let's go back like a few hundred years when we're talking about putting people into gender buckets. And that is not a novel idea. In fact, like non-binary, two-spirit individuals have existed and been documented in time since before Jesus was documented into the Bible. So it was actually through colonization era, like a few hundred years ago, where people came in and said, okay, here is the social construct of gender. Men must do this. Women do this. You know, we're going to make the assumption that everybody is straight. And so it's kind of like these buckets, this structure was imposed upon us. And so now is the time to decolonize our worldview of gender and sexuality in that way.
It does bleed. Now it bleeds across from, because science has never really had a different category for gender from sex. Science is always just sex. Science isn't particularly interested in what's going on in your head. That's psychology. And then there's this idea that this also bleeds into politics. So what you're talking about with words like decolonize and all the rest of it is a much more kind of leftist, progressive, this fits right into certain categories of political philosophy rather than anything to do with gender. It just seems to have become gender's the new thing to decolonize because we've sorted out all the others. Do you know what I mean?
I can understand why you would say that. I personally try to avoid getting into a political bucket of this, because I don't want to politicize this, because quite frankly, it's not political. People of any political persuasion can identify outside of the binary buckets of gender. And I think that I personally in my work want to create an environment where everybody, you know, feels welcome to have that dialogue and feel like a part of that, right?
No, I think that's absolutely the healthiest way we could all get along is to depoliticize things. Unfortunately, though, this kind of language does tend towards the sort of postmodern idea of everything's being socially constructed, and nothing is our own fault. There isn't any agency in us. It's all because the system, whether it's a patriarchy or whether it's cisgender norms or whatever they might be, have been imposed on people for thousands of years. It's just completely disregarding all the other things that have been happening over those thousands of years, which humans have just started to accept as natural kind of law, gender dimorphism and the idea of evolution and the idea that naturally they're going to be people who fall outside of a norm. In fact, normally they're the most interesting people in society, aren't they?
Yes, definitely. And I think, unfortunately, this language has become politicized. It shouldn't be politicized. It's like, politicians of all political persuasions are using the language to make it politicized and fire people up and create this conflict. And that frustrates me so much. You know, I think that we should, I would love to move the dialogue outside of a political conversation and making it that way, because quite frankly we're talking about human beings and like the human race and how we can evolve all across the planet, and one of those ways is getting to understand ourselves at a deeper level and understand other people at a deeper level as well. It shouldn't be politicized. And even when I say like gender is a social construct, just because I've used the word social doesn't mean that I'm now going to like lean left liberal.
You're off to read your marks.
Yeah. Exactly.
I think that that's probably the safest place for, because I do think that then, trans people or lesbian or gay or bi people get pulled into an argument they didn't ask for.
Exactly.
By people who are using a certain discussion for their own political advantage. But I do want to move on to some of these other questions, because we can get mired in this all day. So you've got to explain this to me. It came up in a conversation with some friends the other day. What is the difference between someone who's pansexual and someone who's bisexual?
Love that question. It is actually chapter 12 of the book. I can help explain it. I'll start off with bi. The reason why the book is called Are Bisexuals Just Greedy is because my father, when I was like a teenager, I didn't come out as bi till like later in life, like in my early 30s. And so as a teenager, my dad just suddenly blurted out, I can understand men being gay and I can understand women being lesbians, but I think bisexuals are just greedy. And I never understood, you know, what that meant. And so I had to explore it later in life. And
he meant is you'd walk into a party and this obviously once you'd realized that you were bisexual.
Right.
And instead of having a 50% chance of the audience and finding someone that you might like, you had 100% chance of having
that. But the thing is, okay, so I was like doing the calculation. It's so funny you brought this up, because I was brushing my teeth the other morning thinking one day someone's going to ask me, is it good having 100%? But if you think about it, you don't have 100% because, all right, let's just take like men and women in a binary bucket. Let's say on the male side, take out the gay guys, because the gay guys aren't going to be interested in me. So that leaves only like the straight and the bi guys. And then on the women's side, only the lesbians and the bis might be interested in me. All the straight women aren't going to be interested in me. So it's not 100%.
And you use the word might, because they might not find you attractive, but you might not find them attractive
either. In the same way, streaming rather problem. Besides, lesbians don't really like bisexual people very much. So let's take out 50% of the lesbians.
This is another thing that you bring up. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but a lot of the gay and lesbian community actually don't believe in bisexuality. No. Because they think bisexual people are just in the closet, right?
We're just greedy, and they think that we're in the closet and we're not gay enough, and all of those things. We actually get, I find as a bi person, I get more embraced by straight people than I do lesbian
quite gays. Probably, especially as a bi woman, right?
Especially as a bi woman, yes, because we've got all those stigma and stereotype about how we're just promiscuous and like we're picky and choosy. We can't make our mind up. We're not reliable. We won't be faithful. You know, all of that shit, which that could be true for anybody. It doesn't, any sexual orientation can have those behaviors. Yeah. But I will graduate to help understand what's the difference between bi and pan, because it's very subtle difference. Some people like myself, I would say it's, they're synonyms. I would use them interchangeably. The reason I turn, say bi is because an advocacy point. However, there is a very subtle difference, because a lot of pan people would say that they, wouldn't never use the word bi. Let me first of all say that bisexual does not mean, it's not a binary. It's not like you're not attracted to men or women. It's actually attracted to the same as or different from you. And so I have the capacity to be romantically and or sexually attracted to somebody who has the same gender as me or a different gender than me. That would be bi. Pan would be, have the capacity to be romantically and or sexually attracted to somebody of any gender. So it's simple semantics. Like pan is any, pan is any, bi is the same as or different from. One of the jokes that I make about in the book, like I use the analogy of cherries. So Bing cherries are the most common cherry used in pie. So let's say straight people only like Bing cherry pie. Bi people like Bing cherry pie, and maybe one other cherry, maybe more than one other cherry, maybe several, maybe all. But how can I possibly know? Because I haven't tried them all, so I can't tell you how many cherries.
So your dad asked you, because you were getting to a story about your dad when I first interrupted you. He asked you if bisexual people are just greedy.
Yes.
And it was, what was the answer? Because if he was right all those years ago, maybe he knew something about you you didn't even know.
Maybe. Like, he was baffled. Like, when I first came out as lesbian, and he was completely confused. And he was like, but you had boy posters on your room as a teenager. Like, this makes no sense. But I was a solid lesbian for 7 years. You know, I never thought I was going anywhere else.
Solidly.
when I came out as bi, my dad's like, well, that makes much more sense.
Well, I know two girls. They coincidentally got married last year.
Yeah.
They were both into guys before they met each other.
Yeah,
and
it's possible.
What I've always found really charming about the idea of bisexual people, and many of the ones that I know, is that it seems, and by no means am I trying to grade anybody or say anyone's better than anyone else, but I do think that if there is something charming about bi people, it is that they tend to fall in love with the person or be attracted to the person, not their junk. Correct. Whereas if you, as you said just now, solid lesbian, you know, you kind of know what you're all about down there and you know what you're interested in. And the same goes for gay guys and the same goes for straight people, right?
Correct. Yes. No, I thank you so much, because that is truly how I feel, like living as a bi person, other bi people that I know, bi pan, is definitely about the person, not about the junk. And I will say that one of the things that I came to realize, like in my own discovery of being bi, was when I came out as a lesbian, I would excitedly tell people that, yay, I'm never going to have to give a blowjob again. And then when I came out as bi, I was thinking, shit, am I going to have to give blowjobs again now?
Back at it again.
But then I realized, now get this, I thought to myself, well, hang on a minute. Being a lesbian doesn't mean that you're not going to give a blowjob, because some women are born with a penis and would like to keep it and have a blowjob.
All right. So this is where it gets very complicated, and this is where your dad shouldn't be reading, right?
Well, that's why I told him, like, just to not look.
You know, it is an amazing time to be alive, because all of this conversation that we're having now would have been, first of all, thrown out as nonsense. In any previous generation. Second of all, it would have been treated as near criminal in some countries. And you know, in South Africa, to be serious for just a second, we do have an enormous problem with people who are correctively raped, and there's some horrendous stuff that happens in this country when it comes to just the gay community. Trans is a whole step further, which I believe we've still got to make much progress towards. Yeah. And while there are, I mean, even you and I will disagree on a number of things, it doesn't really matter.
No, it doesn't.
As long as people are treated with respect and are able to live their lives in a meaningful way, who cares about these labels? What really interests me, though, is how many people these days are comfortable talking about it, and who will suddenly say, you know, you'll be at a party with a bunch of people and one of your friends will come up and go, you know, I think I'm attracted to that girl? And you'll say, oh, I thought you were straight. And it won't be a, oh, I thought you were straight, as if, you know, now we have to get rid of you. It's now kind of become, certainly in the you know, in the modern Western world, and in some parts of the rest of it, too few, if you ask me, it's become much more something that's not just socially acceptable, but people warm to it. People are embracing of that kind of admission, of that kind of self-development, of that kind of acceptance of self. And that's probably healthy in any way, shape, and form that it manifests.
No, extremely. And again, that's why I think it's an exciting time to be able to have these conversations and take them out of a political realm. Because as you mentioned earlier, you know, violence against the community, and also across the world, there are some countries where it is criminalized, and you can get stoned to death, you know, for being gay or LGBTQ. And that's the issue. Like, that's the problem. Like, for me, it's like, let's create an environment where all people can express their gender exactly how they feel on the inside and express their sexual orientation and realize that this is just a part of the glorious nature of human beings. Like, this is not a criminal activity.
And isn't it good that we can acknowledge, and I don't think we do this enough, acknowledge that the attitudes by and large across vast countries like America, where you are, have changed almost within a generation. People have suddenly, you know, gay marriage used to be a controversial discussion.
Yeah.
And in pockets, it still is. But by and large, they did a Pew research poll not so long ago. And somewhere between when Barack Obama started off as president and said he was against gay marriage.
Yeah.
And by the time he left as president, people's attitudes had changed so much about gay marriage that now the default position is, sure, why not? Yeah. Why would that be a problem? It almost seems archaic to believe the opposite. That's progress that we should take, you know, we should take some stock of that and be proud of the fact that in many parts of the world, we've moved very quickly.
Correct. And because today, 1 in 6 of Gen Z identify as LGBTQ. And out of those 1 in 6, 72% identify as bi, pan, or queer. So it's like younger generations are getting it. Like, they're coming out. They're not, they're just like completely ignoring this rule, this unsaid rule of like, this is how you have to be and behave. I was going to say one other thing. Okay. So here in America, there's a very conservative politician called Ted Cruz, who has been vocal against gay marriage or same-sex marriage and anything supporting the LGBTQ community. Well, his daughter has just come out as bisexual. And it's like, when you have prominent figures whose family are coming out as LGBTQ, you can't ignore it. Like, you're going to have to stop politicizing this. Like, this is not... Stop
that happened to Dick
people.
Cheney as well. Remember when
Correct.
He was vice
yes, his, yes, his daughter Desmond. And so realizing that, you know, when politicians, and I didn't want to go back into the political environment, but I just simply wanted to say, this is a stupid thing to use for political gain, because this is like, you know, commenting on different people's hair color. Stop. You know, just acknowledge.
You mentioned that Gen Z and 1 in 6 people in the Gen Z generation believe that they are or associate with or identify as whatever the various categories were. There's a very interesting book, and it's controversial. It's been banned by a number of online bookstores. It's written by someone who doesn't seem to me to have bad bona fides. Her name is Abigail Schreier, and she's identified that there is some kind of a contagion, a social contagion going around at the moment. It is cool. And young people especially, you know, you get told you're brave. You get told, you know, well done for coming out in many parts of you know, certainly America. And they've been mapping this, and they've been saying that, well, young girls, especially girls, in their teenage years, feel very uncomfortable in their bodies. There's a lot of change going on. There's a lot of social pressure on them. There's a lot of bullying that happens. Now that social media follows you home, it doesn't just stop at school like it might have in our generation. And she posits the theory that there may be a thing going on at the moment which has made it so cool. And listen, I'm all for it being cool. You know, let everybody be who they want to be. But if it's actually persuading some people that they may be a part of a community that they're not, just so they can get social cachet, would that be worth stopping and taking stock of and being a little bit concerned about.
I can understand someone positing that, but I would also look to the fact that while it's, again, it's like only one in six, and it's still
that's quite
not
a lot,
easy.
Though. I mean, it's quite a lot. Certainly more than I've ever, you know, been able to come out before.
But the fact that non-binary people have always existed since the beginning of time, for me, it's more like a reawakening of who we always were. And I'll also say that even in a place like America, where you might not legally get, you know, criminalized, you know, deemed a criminal for being LGBTQ, sure, it's still not easy to come out. Like, there's still high rates of bullying, there's high rates of suicide. And so I don't think people would like come out just because it's cool when you still face such backlash. Like here in Texas, there's a lot of pushback against people coming out, and there are lawmakers who've been trying to put in some bans against LGBTQ people for various reasons in school. And the Trevor Project, that is a charity here that assists, that is a suicide hotline, saw like a massive increase in calls to their hotline. So I don't necessarily feel that it's deemed such a cool thing that a significantly large number of people would come out just because it's the cool thing. Secondly to that, I would also say that I think it's healthy to explore who you are.
Yeah, it may be temporary, right? I mean, some people go through a phase. Certainly,
and that's okay.
You know, there isn't a guy or girl who hasn't like looked at the boy's toys if they're a girl, or the girl's toys if they're a boy, and thought, yeah, I'd like to play with that. Who are you to tell me I can't?
Except me. I used to hate my brother's Tonka trucks. It was so boring.
Well, okay. I do, again, to get away from the political, because these are things, and by no means am I insinuating that, you know, it's so cool to be gay that they don't deal with enormous amounts of pushback from the community. And obviously there are places in all the most evolved societies, and even in families which are tremendously open and, you know, thoughtful and gentle on these subjects, there are many places where people still don't feel comfortable to really be themselves. And we don't want anyone to feel like that. To move on to something that's a little bit funnier too. And I say funnier because this is, again, where you get into the reads and people, some of them will get upset, but I find it hilarious. If a straight guy sleeps with... This is not okay. So you got to help me figure this out. We're going to unpack this bit by bit. A straight guy wants to make love with a trans woman.
Yes.
Does that mean he's gay?
Now, let me find the chapter for that.
You see, you even have to check your notes. So I just want everybody to know it's okay if you get it wrong.
Ta-da! No, I love it. Thank you. Okay. So I love this because this helps us like break down gender and sex. So the bottom line is no, straight men can make love or have sex or consensually with a trans woman. And it doesn't mean that he's gay. So who you go to bed with is not who you go to bed as. So that guy's sexual orientation remains the same and is not determined by the person that he's sleeping with. Okay. So one of the things, again, that we have to go back to remember is like, you're thinking of a straight guy and you're thinking of a cisgender straight guy and he's going to bed with a trans woman. You're already making the assumption that she's still got a penis. She may or may not have a penis. What her body parts look like is completely irrelevant to the conversation.
Might be a hell of a surprise though in the bedroom.
It could be a surprise if you weren't prepared, but it could be a delightful surprise. You know?
I have a friend and he's much older than I am, and he went off to Thailand as many men have over the years to meet those lovely Thai lady boys.
He
came back from his holiday and all of his mates said, go on, tell the story about your experience. And he kind of reluctantly said, oh no, you know, it's, you know, sort of a bit embarrassing. Anyway, he eventually started telling us the story about this lovely looking girl that he'd taken back to his hotel. And they were both getting very amorous with each other. And they said, well, you know, what happened? And he went, well, the train had left the station. So it all went ahead. I don't know what happened. I don't know any details, but you can only imagine.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's great because, like, consenting adults having sex, you should just be able to do whatever you want with whatever body parts you've got, right?
Sure.
Which goes down to the beauty, you know.
Well, don't hurt each other if possible. There's some people who like that. But, yeah, you know, don't do it against their will.
Exactly. That's the thing. Not against their will. And everybody's having fun. I think that's what it should all be about. But I can break down, like, in a nerdy way about how the straight guy's not gay.
Explain to me how.
Because sexual orientation can be broken into three things: attraction, identity, and behavior. Who you're attracted to, how you identify, and then how you behave. And so let's take this straight guy. He's attracted to women. Well, the trans woman is a woman, so she's a woman. Identity, he identifies as straight. No one can tell you your identity other than you. And behavior is therefore, you know, how you act on it, like where you want, you know, if you want to sexually act upon your identity. And because she's a woman, again, it doesn't matter what her genitals look like. He's a straight man attracted to women, and that keeps him straight.
But doesn't this completely invalidate just about every argument about coming out? Because, like, you might be caught in flagrante delicto with somebody, right?
By court, I mean
someone may walk in on you having sex with someone in a room and assume, because that person was of the same gender as you, that you might be gay.
Right.
But if you still identify in your head as straight.
Right. I think that...
You know what I mean?
Like, yes,
this is where
I do.
It gets confusing, because society does have a role to play in this then. And it can't all just be in your head, because otherwise it could change. I mean, you don't even know what kind of person you were 3 weeks ago and how you might be in 3 weeks' time. It becomes very muddy, so the definitions almost run away.
The thing that we need to move away from is making judgments on other people based on what their genitals look like, right? So...
But that seems to be the whole point of any of these categories. Why bother? If we're not making judgment, just say, you know, Fiona.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that would be great.
Chances of me and you having sex are very, very small. So I can say, I was chatting to Fiona the other day. I don't know what her sexuality is. I don't know what her gender identity is. You know what I mean?
Oh my God, my brain is getting confused. You know, I'm still getting over COVID. You know, this is hard. Right. This is a hard puzzle to get through. We all have a right to be able to use the label that most feels right for us to define our sexual orientation. One of the things that we need to get away from is judging someone's sexual orientation based upon genitals. So regardless if I'm in a sexual relationship with someone with a penis or vagina, that doesn't determine my sexual orientation. I would say simplest, cleanest version of it all.
But in the end, I mean, it comes down to Fiona and whoever. And these are two people. It isn't two meat vehicles with junk.
No, we've got little spirits running inside of us too.
Yeah, and that's also where it gets complicated, because I've always said to friends of mine who are in the LGBT community that the L's don't really like the V's. The G's don't have anything in common with the L's. In fact, the rudest people when it comes to lesbians are probably the gay guys. Then you got the T's who sometimes are operating on a completely different agenda to the L's, G's, and B's, because for them, it's not about sexuality. It's about gender identity. And sometimes those two run into each other when it comes to, like, trans women in sport, for example. You know, a lot of lesbians who are very pissed off about trans women in sport.
I know.
And they don't like each other. They've got nothing in common. So when we say the LGBT community, it isn't really a community. It's a bunch of conflicting interests, right?
Are you sure you're not one of us, Gareth?
Hey, you know what? Who the hell knows what's going on in the world these days? But you understand, like, we can't talk about a community if they actually, in the case of, let's say, trans women in sport, have no common ground at all.
Yeah, I think that, I mean...
they've all been lumped together against their will, which is precisely what straight people have done to those people for thousands of years.
Your summary of the stereotype is hilarious, and I do relate to it very, very much. I think there is an undertone of us that actually is a community and is there for each other. Like, you know, I'm a cis woman and I dedicated 8 years of my life advocating for trans service members. there's more people like me who are doing advocacy work for each other as well, like not just for our own causes. And then at the same time, I've heard some horrific things from lesbians and gays.
I mean, it's almost like a coalition of the disaffected in some ways. You know, they're all, no. I don't mean this in a disparaging way. Gosh. I just mean, it's all these people who've been kind of thrown out of the cisgender norm and the straight norms of human history. These are groups of people who actually have very little in common with each other, other than that they were basically othered by the straight community and the cis community for thousands of years. So, We almost have to start taking a little bit more of a nuanced approach. You know, someone will say they're an LGBTQIA activist, but actually they've done bugger all for the asexual people for thousands of years, and they're not going to do anything. They're not going to do anything for the two-spiriters. You know what I mean?
Well, they don't know what asexual means to start off with.
And so, also, what are the two-spirit people doing in there? That's very confusing because that doesn't necessarily have anything to do with gender or sex.
What brings up? Well, no, two-spirit does has
not necessarily
to do with gender. Yeah.
Not necessarily.
I think
you could have someone who's got a two-spirit and they're both men, for example, very ordinary men in their heads.
A two-spirit individual does not identify as being 100% male or 100% female. And two-spirit individuals have, again, like existed for thousands of years. And were definitely, you know, here in the Americas before Christopher Columbus.
Native American.
Correct. Native American. And so what I would say, though, what we have in common is our exploration of gender and sexuality. And I would say that straight people are not excluded from that conversation or that environment. Like, I'm looking forward to, as we evolve in our understanding of ourselves and each other, you'll find that the community actually like just gets wider and wider and wider. And I think all people, including LGBTQ people, are afraid of change. What a lot of the resistance that we see is fear that the status quo is going away. And that's where people kind of like rise up and come back with vitriol and like, you know, inside the community, you know, you might say bitchy things about each other, or you've got like, you know, straight people that don't get it at all, but all they see is this change and they're like, don't like change. And so then there's this fear. And then, you know, you see the violence and the stigma and discrimination against people.
Isn't this the whole point? I mean, you're a filmmaker and you're a writer, and you know, the whole point of language really is to try and make sense of things.
Yeah.
But you and I have just had a conversation, and I completely agree with you that there is pretty much no difference between the pan and the bi, for example. So, and the number of people who are going to pick at that difference are going to be vanishingly small. Isn't it worth just rolling it up so that this bloody acronym doesn't carry on for kilometers and start to become a mockery? Because ultimately, look, the enemies of this community, if it is a community, the people who really don't, the bigots of this world, who really don't like the LGBTQ people and who have an axe to grind and who want to make it difficult for them to live their authentic lives, those people want to find a handle to punish them with. And it has become very muddy, very complicated. And while all of this is extremely important for people to develop and to grow and to become themselves, it's also a bit of navel gazing a lot of the time. You know, when you have two sort of pan people discussing the differences between their particular category of pan, this is like, you know, string theory physicists talking about the state of a quark. It's something that so few of us can relate to anymore at that level, that it becomes a bit ridiculous.
I think it's not ridiculous to them, and we wouldn't like cancel those physicists from having their, you know, their in-depth conversation about the quark. I think, and also like the word bisexual can mean different things to different people and pan. And that doesn't really matter. Like, let people have that conversation. It doesn't really affect you or your, you know, your world. you know, it's not encroaching on anything.
But it kind of does these days, because if you don't know this stuff and you make a misstep, it can be very, very devastating in the workplace, in schools, in universities. I think it does have consequences these days, and they go the other way some of the time, which is a little bit scary.
I think that, again, like, we have to go back to doing our own self-examination and our self-work and, like, figure out, like, why are you getting triggered by this? Like, why does that bother you so much? And, like, you know, journal about it. Think about your own gender and your own sexual orientation. But also, I will say, okay, Gareth, regarding language, yes, one day I hope that the language isn't necessarily needed in order to confuse people, but language has uses in forming community and in being able to bring people together. So if I have words, I don't think we have all the language that we need. That's the problem. It's the language that's limiting us. And so the more conversation we have about it, the more words that we can use to describe who we are. And when you can find somebody who also feels the way you do, you feel less alone in the world. So I'd say, one, language is great for community, but two, we need these words for healthcare policy and for laws and protection, because at the end of the day, there is violence against the LGBTQ community, and that is not acceptable. And so we cannot stop having this conversation, and we cannot stop exploring the language and the words until everybody is safe and can walk the world in equity without being fearful of being violated and killed for who they are. So for me, it's still important. Yeah.
Well, I mean, this is why it's so important to talk to you about this book, because there are still so many questions that are very cloudy and confusing. Mm. And make people nervous that, you know, they're so scared of getting it wrong that they just don't even ask. And that others people in a far more destructive way, because then, you know, you've got this person who's almost a little bit resentful that they don't understand and they're not sure why. And on the other hand, you've got people who go, oh, what an ignorant idiot.
Hopefully the book has broken it down so that you can read this first and then you can go have the conversation. And I don't want it to be complicated. I don't want it to be, you know, I don't want people to get cancelled for asking, you know, what does pansexual mean?
No. I think you've been an excellent ambassador for this, because throughout this conversation, even though I'm not sure I get even half of it right all of the time, you haven't made me feel uncomfortable about it. And I haven't felt like if I ask something, I'm going to get into trouble for it. And I think that that's really important. I think that people, we all need to expand our understanding. I also like what you said about kind of rediscovering something that's always been a part of humanity that we can maybe start to incorporate back into ourselves and who knows, derive some superpower out of it, because it's entirely possible. I mean, maybe once people have got over, sex is so taboo, even, you know, even straight cisgender sex is so taboo in some places, and still with so many people who claim to be enlightened, that it's probably never going to completely go away and be a non-issue. Mm-mm. But there is this kind of utopian idea that somewhere along the road that we're traveling as a species, we'll get to a point where we can actually just appreciate someone as a person.
Yeah.
And just kind of break through all those walls and not worry about them.
Completely. And I can imagine that through time, more and more people who label themselves straight today are going to realize, wow, I actually have a lot of things in common with LGBTQ people. I think LGBTQ people are like pushing the boundaries of gender and sexuality, and everybody is welcome to that. Straight people can push boundaries of gender and sexuality too. And
many of them do. Some of those fetishes some people are into. Yeah. Don't know if that's going to be. Maybe one day that's also a letter in the.
Let's put that in the queer bucket as well.
Sure. Look, I think you're doing amazing work, and it's just terrific to speak to someone who's as erudite in the way that she can get through these quite complex terms. And also, you've had such experience. You're in this community, so you can help us see what it looks like from the inside. That it's not this terribly judgmental place where, you know, people are trying to take each other down for a definition, but rather it's a way for us to all discover ourselves and each other.
Completely. And I see a lot of young kids that need adults that are respectful and including in them and embracing them in life. And that's the role that we have to play, is to be able to create an environment.
Kids don't know a damn thing. Come on, Fiona. How long did it take you to figure out you were bi?
sorry, that's why I don't have any, but at least I'll help those that have got them, right?
All right. Listen, terrific work and all the best for your book. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And I hope you have an amazing 2022. And let's keep in touch. I'm gonna call on you again if we need to figure out some definition or some complex concept around this. You're the person I'm going to.
Please do. I would love that. I'd relish it.
Thank you,
Gareth.
I've relished this discussion with you. Thank you so
Me
much.
Me too. Mm-mm. CliffCentral.com.